Have you ever had an experience that brought you back to the joy and innocence of being a kid? Thanks for joining me today on the Parable Podcast. I'm your host, Danielle Zapchank, and this is the first of a few of our collaboration episodes with Zoe. They are a nonprofit mission that encourages men, women, and marriages by creating tools, resources, and community spaces that invite people to experience inner healing and intimate connection with God and others. Today, we're going to have a conversation with co-founder Michael Thompson, who shares how an experience at Fenway Park shaped this parable story about his innocence.
There's a time to lose some of that innocence to this world at war, this conflict between darkness and light, between the love of God and the hatred of Satan and his dark kingdom. So it's not fun to talk about that. I think we long for happily ever after because that'll be the time when that won't be our story anymore.
Here's my conversation with Michael Thompson. So excited to introduce to you one of my new friends, co-founder of Zoe, with his wife Robin, Michael Thompson. Michael, so glad you're here today.
And so good to be here today. What a treat. Yeah, well, thank you for having me.
Sure. We are excited because we're kind of collaborating on a couple episodes together. And really the heart of Zoe is just helping people experience just connection and creating resources and environments that aid in truly people being seen and known. And that's my heart when we think about stories. That's how we get connected to people. So I'm excited to talk about Zoe. And I'd love to know, how is that a passion that started for you from the beginning?
We have come to understand, and I would say just believe that, you know, there's something in us all regarding story. And we play pretend when we're little. I remember hearing a friend say, little ones aren't pretending, they're rehearsing. And I still love that idea that, you know, we're in a very large story. We have a part to play. We're all trying to kind of sort that out, figure that out. And along the way, we play multiple parts in you might be a son, you know, you might have buddies, have a friend, you know, you get older and your roles and parts change. And so that's been a huge part of Zoe, is helping people see their role, understand how loved they are. And yet we live in a pretty violent place when it comes to violent on our souls, on our hearts, on our minds, on what we can come to believe about ourselves and the story that some of us, you know, were kind of born into, a story that was happening before we arrived. And then we took it on, or it takes us on as another character in what we call a family. So yeah, the narrative backdrops are just everywhere for all of us. But for Zoe, I didn't come to a better understanding of that with God's help until I was in my late 30s. So what happens to people like me, I would say I was a pretty disoriented Christian. I knew tenets and I knew theology, but without story and narrative and a larger story that my story was in, there's a gravitational pull to being the center of the story. And everything and everyone is kind of revolving around you and your opinions and your ideas and your reactions and responses. And so one of the questions, Danielle, we ask at a lot of our events early on, it's kind of a cheeky question, not meant to be too offensive, but what are the odds, Danielle, that you have interpreted your life accurately? And so if you have misunderstood things, I mean, I have a hard enough time with texts and emails in a day-to-day basis, but being on time, you know, for a podcast or something that, you know, is in the, but all of managing all of that, you know, there's a lot of things that can go awry. And so we believe that in essence, if you misunderstood some things and maybe they were powerful things about you or about God or about others, then there's a really strong, strong chance that you might be living with some falsehoods or some lies about you or about God or about others. And so knowing that that is the case across the board, we've got a lot of opportunities to help people with some of that confusion or even distortion or very unhelpful and unhealthy narrative. See that story reclaimed and see people find that hope again, and then walk in that hope to find and discover who they truly are and that they belong and mm-hmm. that there's a lot more going on in every scene and behind every scene than most people know. So if you're not overwhelmed by that, then you're probably not listening to what we're talking about. They yeah. don't understand. And so I think that's why Jesus was so keen on parables. Just shout out to you on the yeah. Parable Podcast, and trying to help people understand how things work, who they are in it, by giving them very obtainable, grabbable, practical illustrations of what that's like, so they could relate to that and see, he said, and so they could see and understand with the eyes and ears of their heart. So,
well, Michael, I think that is so true. I was just having a conversation about mentoring the next generation, and, you know, they are just desperate for truth. And I think that kind of plays into all of our lives, where you're right. Are we understanding the lens of where we truly are? Are we understanding our role? Have we got it all wrong? And so you had mentioned that you grew up in Oklahoma. And for you as a young person, what was your role? What did you think your purpose was as a young kid? And did you, when you say you understood the tenets of the Christian faith, did you truly know Jesus? Or did you understand Jesus as more than a name?
Yeah, it's a great question. I laugh because no, I really didn't understand Jesus. But the Jesus that was presented to me to understand, I think I did to the best that I could. And so I understood as a boy, you know, some of those basic tenets of he died for you. He died because of sin. And again, there is some truth in, there's truth in that reality. And yet there's so much more, you know. And so in the mind and heart of a boy, 8, 9, 10, at 11, I walked an aisle, you know, at our church with my brother. You know, we had seen people do that. And so we wanted to accept Christ. And, you know, that was, Daniel, maybe the first time of a couple hundred times I think I accepted Christ after that. Just being sure, is this really working? You know, and so much of the onus of it all being back on me, back in that kind of the center of the story and not that greatest story. So there was the beauty and goodness of a moral compass. There was the beauty and goodness of a mom and dad who loved, provided, and protected. But in the faith space, in the church space, I was probably far more a recipient. I was going to say victim, but I'll say recipient of the boy in the hands of an angry God than I was a boy in the hands of a loving God. And so there's a few chapters to talk about, even of the trajectory that kind of set my life on, of just trying to somehow please God rather than enjoy being loved by God. But that's what I mean early about what are the chances you've interpreted your life accurately. And I grew up in churches that the guy up front got a little loud and got a little, there was always those couple times he hit the podium, you know, and like, everybody's waking up. So, you know, what's an 8-year-old or 10-year-old, 12-year-old going to think about how this God thing worked? I needed to unlearn a lot of things. So that's part of my story.
I think that resonates with so many of us, where it just becomes something that is, we go to this every Sunday. This is the lessons that we've learned. And it almost becomes mundane after a while. And one thing that I noticed when I was kind of looking over what Zoe is all about is there was this quote, and I thought this was so important because I never even thought of it like this. It says, life as Christian is more than just trying to keep it all together and not sin. And I think for many of us growing up, it's like, yes, we just have to keep it together because that's how we're going to be happy and we don't sin. And so before we get into your parable story, I'd love for you to kind of speak into that, where people feel like, oh, well, as a Christian, my goal is just not sinning. And that's all I got to do.
I believe there's a lot of conversions along the way, and especially in the way of faith. A lot of new things that will come to us on our journey. I mean, there was a day, believe it or not, there was a day. It was the first day that you tried pizza. There was a day. As silly as that sounds, there's just a lot of days that it's a first time and it's a first thing. And so I was in my 30s. When this kind of old way, I didn't know it was an old way till you find out there's kind of a new way. That's right. Jesus brings the new covenant and the new commandments. And so all of that to say, I was at a conference and was listening to a message about what if the cross is not intended to be the central component of the gospel. And I was like, whoa, this may be heretical. Can you say that? You know, so I was very, very, very indoctrinated in some ways to the gospel is sin, the cross, and forgiveness. Those are the three crayons that you get. Color everything with those. And so that makes for sinners, you know, saved by grace for sure, and leads to what I like what you said from the either, I think it was a website of so my job is to try not to sin. And then when you do, you know, there's, you go to the penalty box, you get in timeout, you kind of move away from God when really all of the New Testament all just shows Jesus moving towards, mm-hmm. quote, sinners, not away from. And so when the resurrection became more central rather than a PS or an add-on, and the resurrection and the power and the authority that Jesus claimed or reclaimed in Matthew 28, when he says, and now all power and authority has been given to me. I thought I was being shown that the first Adam had given this away, and it was the second Adam, Jesus, who came to reclaim it. You know, all of a sudden the gospel is getting bigger and bigger and bigger, yeah. versus that small three crayons. My box became, what, 12 and then 24, right? You know, the math, and it's just becoming more and more colorful. All the things that are the gospel, you mm-hmm. know, versus the reduction program. I started to see the expansion mm-hmm. program of the gospel, and it began to affect me to my bones, to my soul and my heart. And I really, really began to kind of not move away from, but add to the sin and the forgiveness piece to this life and resurrection. And that, yes, he died, he had to die, but it was so he could raise again in power and authority and strength and kindness, all the things that he demonstrated and all the things that he still is. And so that Jesus became someone that I started to learn and enjoy hanging out with, not just learning about.
Yeah,
and that changed a lot of things.
That's so good, Michael, because I think when we shift that perspective of how do we encounter Jesus daily, mm-hmm. how do we have a conversation? Because there is what you were talking about, like the pastor in the pulpit and like fire and brimstone.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You know, there is this distancing. And so to bring Jesus in, he's always been there, but to realize that. And I love your analogy of the crayons, because when I was going to school, it was super cool if you got the crayons that had the sharp in the box.
Yeah, on the side. Yeah.
So like if you can just expand, you know, God like wants to provide so much beauty, so much color mm-hmm. into our lives, and he's mm-hmm. going to sharpen, you know, he's mm-hmm. going to provide those tools as we draw closer to him more and more. Mm-hmm. So
I never thought of it that way until you said the expansion of the colors. And if you just said, well, what three colors did he give you? What three mm-hmm. colors did you have, you know, growing up? I'd probably say black, white, and gray, you know? Yeah. And so to see those, the expansion of those into, you know, even a much broader landscape of color mm-hmm. and experiences and those conversions I was talking about. Mm-hmm. So that's when, you know, things really, really changed. And I yeah. felt like being, I've heard it said this way, I kind of went from needing to be and trying to be a good boy to what is it like to be a loved boy? And how does that change? And it changed a lot. It changed mm-hmm. things. Not right away, not all of it, but, you know, I still think we all have that tendency to perform for love or protect ourselves from being hurt. And I think there's some goodness in that, but I probably had some extremes on both fronts and just needed Jesus to come and, you know, sand those, some of those yeah. corners or lop some of them off. But yeah,
it's a constant sanding and refining yeah. process.
Amen. Yeah. That's true.
All right. Well, I mean, you've already kind of shared a bunch of parables already. So let's jump into mm-hmm. what you wanted to share with us today. One of your stories where you mm-hmm. felt like, wow, God really opened up the expanded my crayon box here with yeah. one of these stories.
You asked me about pointing towards something that I had written in one yeah. of the books. And so the most recent book, King Me, mm-hmm. is a book primarily for men. But I think it has wonderful applications, I'm finding out, for women as well. But in this book, one of the sections I talk about is I move the reader through stages of the masculine journey. You know, you think about developmental psychology, you know, these stages of development. And then what does that really look like spiritually for particularly a boy? But the translations work pretty well for the feminine heart, too. So yeah, one more context piece. It might be Madame L'Engle who said, we are all the ages that we've ever been. So, you know, there's these containers, there's these spaces. We might call them, Danielle, like young places, mm-hmm. you know, places of my youth, things that might remind you in a moment, you know, of something that you experienced when you were young. Sure. It could be traumatic, no doubt, but mm-hmm. it can also be beautiful and wonderful and have a sweet, you know, memory and sweet peace to it. So the story, I was with my wife, we had the opportunity a few years ago to go to Boston and had never been to Boston. And we did the duck tour. We did the kind of the colonial walk and just, you know, very touristy. And on purpose, we were all about it. But the big, big, big deal for me was I got tickets to Fenway.
Okay.
I got tickets to see the Boston Red Sox play, which was so, I was so excited about it. So I'm 59 now, so I was probably 55, 54 when we did this. I mean, I took my mitt, you know.
Wow. Okay. Going for it.
And so just like you'd imagine at a big league park, but this is one of the oldest parks mm-hmm. in Major League Baseball. And so something happened when I was walking from the street and beginning to move inside the stadium. You remember that movie Big with Tom Hanks?
Yes, I loved it. Yeah.
I mean, when he kind of walks out and his clothes are all big and he's little, that's what was happening to me. It was like I was walking into this stadium and then into the light. You walk through a tunnel, all the tunnels that lead to people's seats. I just began feeling very, very young. And wishing my dad was with me. Remembering when we lived in Southern California, the ball games that he took me to when I was 6 and 7 and 8. Just very conscious of all of that, being very kindly ushered back to years of naivety, years of innocence, years of you're with your dad, you're safe, you're okay. And he's bringing you somewhere to share an experience with him. And in all that, I could tell you some more, but in all that, the smells, from popcorn to hot dogs and all of that, the thousands of sodas that have probably hit the ground, you know, and the tackiness of the cement, all of it, I'm there with God being fathered and he showing me and telling me that that's how I want to do life with you. I want mm-hmm. you to be with me. I'm with you. And the young places can be resurrected in things like that. Sometimes can be just to be with. Other times it's to excavate something. He's after something mm-hmm. that he may want to heal or bring nurture to or even initiate. So yeah, God at the ballpark, you know, kind of illustration story of how I had been probably 20 years now and at that time, kind of moving from the academic theological spaces, which are good, to the experiential. And Danielle was learning over time how to seek him and how to listen and how to ask questions. So I wasn't surprised. He didn't surprise me in Fenway, but I still was amazed by what God did to my heart there.
Yeah. I think that is a special moment. I think experiences, they matter so much.
So much.
I think that is how I best learn through experience. You know, when you said the part about, you know, education, like I go back and I happened to go to a Christian college and I kick myself how many times I did not pay attention to my biblical studies teacher. But I think like that's a little bit of why is just because I need that experience to wrap myself around it, to really understand it better. So I appreciate that perspective that you shared. I'd love for you to speak into, you know, when you talked about having this like consciousness of being young, being almost naive to a certain experience. Why do you think we've lost that in our lives?
It's a great question. And the lost part's a good word. I think where my heart goes as some kind of answer or direction is when Jesus talks about the enemy comes to steal, kill, and destroy. Mm-hmm. I think the result of that is a lostness. But I think when you talk about naivety and innocence, you know, that we should have when we're little, you know, the world and this fallen place and the enemy, which we contend with, we contend with kind of an unholy trinity. There's the false self flesh that Paul talks mm-hmm. about. There's the hostility of a fallen world because you've got people sinning, especially people even in authority roles when you're little. Teachers aren't perfect. pastors aren't perfect, youth leaders aren't perfect, you know, and so on any given day, you could be a casualty of their harsh treatment of your heart. And then you literally have an enemy, like you have an adversary, an opposition. And when you're 7, 8, 9, 10, you know, you're not supposed to know how to fight. You're supposed to have people who are oriented, who could fight for you, who could help you interpret those lies when they happen, who could kind of unravel you from things that can tangle you up. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I've learned over some time, that it's not just you not doing it right or figuring it out. There's a lot more forces at work than most of us knew. And there's a time to know that, you know, and I think that is there's a time to lose some of that innocence to this world at war, this conflict between darkness and light, between the love of God and the hatred of Satan and his dark kingdom. So it's not fun to talk about that.
Sure.
You know, I think we long for happily ever after, because that'll be the time when that won't be our story anymore. And yet, until then, we live in Tolkien's Middle Earth, you know, where there's orcs and the Dark Lord Sauron and all those parables and illustrations that help us understand some more of our story. But the restoration of things and the recovery of you and the recovery of me is somehow related to that loss. And this is what God specializes in, the rescue, the restoration, and the redemption of things that have gone wrong and do go wrong in a person's life story. Because I don't believe that everything that happens to you is God's will, because people sin all the time. You're not safe until you're 14, or you're not safe until you're 10. You know, so that just compounds the whole problem of why is this happening and the loss of innocence. I mean, it's a sad thing, and we should be able to be ushered into an awareness that we live in a conflict, we live in a battle, and we do want and need to have people who protect us and then also show us how to, as Proverbs 4:23 says, guard our own hearts.
Yeah.
And that's trial and error. You said it. Through experience, you learn great things. And through experience, you can also be a casualty or cause casualties.
So this book, King Me, it is just understanding and like loving and leading well, you know, from the masculine perspective. I believe that we're better together. You know, there's male and female, and like we were created to work together. And so I have a son and daughter, and I know you have a couple of daughters.
Girls,
is that right?
Three girls, yeah.
Yeah. And I think like in our culture right now, sometimes when we hear the word masculine, like that sounds like that can go dark real easily. And you know, it's just because of those perspectives, those experiences that we've experienced. So I'd love for you to speak into like why God calls men to have this masculine sense. And it is out of a place of like, he's called us to this, but in a loving way, how it's in God's way, not just what the world has shaped it and created it to be.
Yeah. You got big questions today. I love what you said about, I think as image bearers, masculine and feminine, we share a lot of common ground, 50, 60, maybe 70% of a strength. Women have a strength, men have a strength. And these categories will be, you know, the more you try to distill something into simplicity, the worse that can, it can be badly misinterpreted. But let me just continue and say that I believe that in the masculine side of image bearing, there is a strength that kind of lends itself to provision and protection. Not that a woman can't be providing, they do. And not that they can't protect, they do. And then in the feminine image bearer, I think there is nurture and a level of protection that comes not so much through provision, but through care and safety. And yet a man can provide care and want and need to make it safe, but there's some uniqueness to it. And so I agree with you. The intention, by everything I have understood, is that two image bearers, a masculine and feminine, would be given the opportunity and responsibility and privilege to pour into whatever version of an image bearer they have now as a baby, a feminine or masculine, and grow them up. Because I believe there's the mother heart of God, and there's the father heart of God. That's something that, again, has come on much more in the last probably two decades, just looking at the Hebrew language, understanding, you know, some of the interpretive ways of making it English, and going back to the Hebrew and understanding, no, this is a feminine noun and pronoun. So anyway, all of that to say, yeah, for men, masculinity has, I believe, a pretty challenging reputation, Danielle, because we have done things, grouping us all together. Sure. Now.
Yeah, I know.
You look at news and you look at, you know, some of the things that men are doing or have done in the political landscape, in the domestic spaces, in the marketplace, in the home front, you know, it's not good. It's a well-earned bad reputation. And so my friends and I believe, well, if men are a really big part of the problem, could that mean that men could be a really big part of the solution? So disoriented men, men who don't know who they are, where they are, and the good God's up to in their lives. And you can be a Christian and be a disoriented man. Mm-hmm. I know from experience. And so versus a man who's oriented, knows who he is in the kingdom, how the kingdom works, and the good God's up to in his life, restoring him, healing him, and restoring him into his true self. When I say it like that, it sounds even to me, Danielle, how stark that is. But the landscape is so full of disoriented men. And so they have to take their questions on the masculine journey. They have to take their questions to the world. And when you take your questions to the world, you're going to get the kind of answers that are going to hurt.
Thank you for that perspective. I do appreciate that. You know, I've had a lot of relationships with women. I've been able to do some amazing work in women's ministry. And for me, as you can tell, I like to ask questions. And women, it's real easy to like have these conversations. I go deep pretty quick. But sometimes for men, that's really challenging. So for Zoe to create experiences, have men come in and be ready to break open these spaces that maybe they haven't had a chance to ever think about or work through. What have been some beautiful moments that have come out of that, that you're like, this is happening, like this is possible?
That's a great question too. Most men that, let's say, that step into a Zoe environment, they usually are men with maybe a little hidden, you know, a little under the surface. They're typically hungry and thirsty, and or they're hurting. So desire in some way, shape, or form to step into a place. It's just kind of like you just don't go to, you don't go to a doctor if you're not hurting. Mm-hmm. You don't seek help if you don't believe you need it. And sooner or later, I think a man's ways, the beautiful way God's kind of arranged for his hunger and thirst is whatever program he's running, it just runs out. And he comes to a place where he's, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to do this. And that is a beautiful, merciful, very hard place. But that's a place that a man will go, I think, many times. And so can that mercy of that scenario, can he find God in that? Can he move towards God? So sometimes, you know, the men who step into our circles, they're escorted, guided, encouraged by another man who sees something that this guy might need and says, you know, come with me. And I think you'll like this. The books have helped a ton. Heart of a Warrior and King Me Now are, I mean, so men are now reading and getting stirred in a way that they want to come for more. Mm-hmm. So they're hungry and thirsty, you know, in that regard. But what we try to do in those environments is, yeah, go after the disoriented by pursuing what it is to be oriented and invite men. We call them, instead of retreats or conferences, we call them encounter weekends. Mm-hmm. What might happen if you encountered God over a weekend a couple times? You know, we feel like we're kind of the waiters and just set the table, try to get them a coffee or a water illustratively, metaphorically, and say, I think Jesus will be here pretty soon. Just hang out and enjoy the music, you know, and, you know, we'll try to share some principles. The principles are good, but I think it's the encounters that really change a man's heart when Jesus wants to show or tell him something. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of our approach to how do the weekends work, or how do we move towards men? Resources, you said earlier, and environments that can encourage them to have a fighting chance, to see things redeemed, to experience and hear from the Father that I see you and I love what I see.
I do love that you and Robin, you and your wife, you co-founded Zoe. You work together and it's men and women. And so you're kind of getting both fronts. And I mean, sometimes as we think about marriage, sometimes one person is a little bit ahead of the other or open or susceptible just to be like what God is doing in their lives. So I know you've done the work, Michael. So, you know, this is your passion. This is your heart. How has either what this book has taught you or what you've learned through Zoe, how has this impacted your marriage with Robin? Like what growth has come out of this for the both of you?
You said something earlier about, you know, your ability to kind of go deeper, quicker, feminine hearts tend to. And I think men go as deep as they can. It's just not usually very, very deep. They weren't versed or experienced in some of that. You know, doing things overtakes or overruns the going places emotionally and relationally. And so, yeah, what happened, I actually kind of got on this path first for just a little while and began to take it home. We have a saying in our Zoe shop, we want to help people get it in their hands so they can get it in their heart so they can take it home. Because the home front is the greatest battlefield that you want to win in your marriage and be victorious and keep the enemy at bay, keep the garden growing. And yet the snakes, they show up. But for Robin, I had some things that God began to, I work with God, that they came off of me. They kind of came out of me. And, you know, whether it was just being, you know, cheeky or frustrating or angry or, you know, some just not kind. And back to that world kind of revolving around me and where I'm at, how I feel, what's so God began to, through some healing in my own story, Robin began to experience a different me. I was more loving, kind, and strong in that way. Strength through love and kindness. And so the weekend that I went away to was actually put on by John Eldridge and his Wild at Heart group, you know, 20 some years ago now. And it was one of the earlier ones, Danielle. So there was a women's retreat. Now we were on staff with Campus Crusade, love crew, love what we were doing. I mean, we're professional Christians, for goodness sakes, you know, helping people put their faith together and, you know, all of that. And yet I had to go to that weekend because I was hurting and I was hungry and thirsty. There's got to be more, you know, didn't know how and where I was lost, but I knew I was. This was resonating with me. And so I went, came home. Some of those alterations began and began to be experiential to Robin. And I found out that they had a women's weekend and I made the mistake of telling her that she needs to go get her heart back. And I think she went because she was excited to get away from me and three little girls for a while, you know, so she was willing to be sent away. But to your point, that's how God worked in our story, where I was only a few steps ahead. And I don't believe necessarily that unequally yoked is, you know, Christian and non-Christian. It can be just maturity between, you know, two image bearers. And so God just began to move in her heart. And so we got on that path together. It was like if I was walking on a path, I never really got out of her sight, but she had to go to an event that, like I did, kind of brought her those yards that had been created because I was experiencing God in some tender ways. And what we both came out of that, Danielle, was that shortly after that, we realized we wanted to kind of trade in service to God for being loved by God. And it felt like we were literally changing zip codes, like we were spiritually moving away from a place where service to God was really admired, and as well as, that's just what we knew. And it's a good thing, but I think there was a better thing. And that's where we kind of changed our address and began to move into that space and live in that space.
Thank you for sharing so candidly, Michael. I appreciate that. I love what you said, like we were professional Christians, because I think so many of us, you're just like, well, goes back to all the way to our beginning of our conversation. You know, we think that we have achieved some kind of level of like membership or what have you. And, you know, God constantly wants to work on our heart. He keeps after us. And so I guess my last question to finish up today is, as an author, what do you hope that the reader hears when they read this next book of yours?
That there's hope. however dark, however crappy, however ugly, however the unholy Trinity, whatever has been done to you, that maybe he'll come, and that hope that things could be different, that hope that would have you turn another page, or, you know, sit quietly and invite him, not into your life again, but invite him to deal with parts of your life, maybe like you never have before. That would be an answer to my prayers.
All right. Well, if you are interested in Michael's book, King Me, Loving and Leading Well, and all of his information, that'll be available in today's show notes, as well as if you want to get connected with Zoe in any of their resources or events, they would love to help you talk with you more. So Michael Thompson, thank you so much for being on the Parable Podcast.
Such a treat. Thank you for the time, and thank you for your good heart and all the ways that you're tending to people's hearts out there through this podcast platform. It's wonderful.
I'm so glad that we can collaborate with the Zoe team in the next couple of months. I'm grateful for talking to Michael today, one of their co-founders, and I hope you heard the heart behind his parable story. To connect with Michael or check out his book, King Me, Loving and Leading Well, or find out more about Zoe, simply visit daniellezapchank.com for details. And here are two reflection questions from our time with Michael. Number one, what is one way this week you can be maybe a little bit more naive or conscious of your innocence so you are able to experience the beauty of God this week in a brand new way? Maybe this is an activity, or maybe this is a mindset shift. Think about an opportunity for you. Number two, Zoe has this beautiful quote that is on their website, and it says, "Life as a Christian is more than just trying to keep it all together and not sin." And I think a lot of us fall into this category at some time in our life, using sin as either a checklist or something that we need to make sure that we don't do every day. And if we are supposed to live a life fully in Christ, it's more about just trying to keep it all together. So I would encourage you to take some time, maybe journal about maybe what that means to you, how you can live a life abundantly in Christ without this idea of just not trying to sin. One easy way you can support the Parable Podcast is simply by sharing this episode with a friend. If you'd like to pass this episode along today, that really helps people find out about these amazing parable stories. Thank you so much to my technical producer, my husband Eric, for his top-notch editing skills. That'll do it for today. I'm grateful that you took the time to spend it with me and hear more about Zoe. Remember, your parable showcases how God is loving and leading us well. We'll see you back again next week on the Parable Podcast.